You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Monster House presents.
Monster Talk's a proud member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, home of such shows as Subtext, The Projection Booth, and The Daily Meditation Podcast. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com.
Led Zeppelin's Jimmy Page took a more serious interest than most. He studied Crowley closely. He collected Crowley's paintings and books. And in 1971, Jimmy Page bought Boleskine House. Page retained ownership of Boleskine until 1991, but the house was actually lived in and looked after by an old school friend called Malcolm Dent.
I had no idea why he'd bought Boleskine House, the estate. I hadn't ever heard of Aleister Crowley. So arriving at Boleskine and discovering, one, that it has a history and a past, and a pretty weird past at that, two, that there are certain things still going on there. Three, there are people who will visit the place to experience this and even practice it. And four, that one of my oldest friends seemed to be actively involved one way or another in this. There was a lot of things to sort of take in.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
Welcome back to Monster Talk. Now we're going to head back to the shores of Loch Ness in Scotland, where we're going to return to our discussion of the structure called Boleskine House. In part one, we covered the history of the house up through the 1960s when it was purchased by Led Zeppelin's guitarist Jimmy Page. In part two, we will discuss what happened next up through the present. This episode does discuss a rather graphic suicide on the property, so there's a content warning. And if you haven't checked out part one, I would recommend doing so before diving into part two, but maybe you like a Christopher Nolan approach to your content, in which case, who am I to judge? Either way, welcome back. Let's dive in.
Monster Talk.
This episode includes coverage of suicide. Self-harm is a serious problem, and one of the best things you can do if you're struggling with such thoughts is to reach out and talk to someone. In the United States, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline can be reached by dialing 988. If you're struggling, please seek help. We care about our listeners and want you to be around for many years to hear stories about monsters, science facts, and, of course, terrible puns. Thanks. Okay, so we're back on part two of our coverage of Boleskine House.
Yeah, and the interesting inhabitants of the house as well. So we've looked at the history, early history of Boleskine House and the Boleskine Parish. We've looked at the Fraser family, and we've looked at Alastair Crowley and his involvement with the house, purchasing the house in order for him to perform a ritual, and everything that was associated with that. So moving on to more contemporary times, a lot of strange things have happened in the house post-Crowley, and those are attributed to the fact that he had lived there and all of the other legends associated with the house. But I think the biggest story to happen after, or one of the biggest stories to happen after Crowley sold the place. So he lived there, he purchased it in 1899, and then he had to sell the place in 1913 and moved into a smaller cottage somewhere in England. And so in the 1960s, so there's this period of time where there was quiet, nothing really going on. And then in the 1960s, the place became embroiled in what's known as the Great Sausage Scandal. It's called the Cadco Affair, or the Great Sausage Scandal. So it's a really bizarre story about a guy named Dennis Lorraine.
The Great Sausage Scandal sounds like a real banger.
So this fellow, Dennis Lorraine, he purchased the house and he got involved with the actor George Sanders. I'm not sure if you've heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
So he was once married to Zsa Zsa Gabor and her sister. I didn't know that. That was an interesting tidbit.
It came as a package.
And, I guess. And so they managed to embezzle millions of pounds in government grants. And this was a pretense of meeting a national shortage of pork products that was going on at the time. So it was said that they purchased a very large number of pigs and then got into trouble with the government, and they just abandoned these poor piggies who were left to starve to death. So a horrible story. But that's not true. So many of these stories associated with Boleskine, you hear them and you think that just doesn't really ring true, that doesn't add up, and you dig into them a bit further. So whether it's Crowley and the ritual, or the Boleskine church being supposedly built in the 10th century or 13th century, a lot of these things just don't, that they're not correct. And so this story, even though the two, Lorraine and Sanders, did set up a company that was called Loch Ness Foods, I like that name. They claimed to the government that they were rearing pigs on the site, but this was all a scam. So there was lots of paperwork, but no piggies, never any pigs. So I think that's it's positive that there weren't any animals involved. But it's just a really weird thing to be linked to the house. But there will be people who will claim that they hear the sounds of pigs oinking and snorting. They can hear these poor pigs starving to death. So how can that possibly be if there was, they never had the livestock there?
So they were herd, but not porcine. No.
But it seems like the Lorraines were a strange family. And Dennis and his wife, Molly, they had a circular bed, supposedly, which was complete with black sheets. And that was installed in what had been Crowley's oratory room. But there's lots of weird things associated with them. And Dennis, unfortunately, went on to take his own life. So we will have to have a content warning for this episode, because that brings us to another story that took place in the 1960s. So there was a family called the Grants who moved into the house. And Wikipedia will tell you one date. Other sources will tell you other dates. But it was sometime in the 1960s. That the Grants lived in the house, and the father of the house was Army Major Edward Grant, and he took his own life as well. This was supposedly in Crowley's bedroom.
The entry in Wikipedia was wrong about Major Grant's death, so I did a little digging and found out that he likely died on November 8th, 1960. The death notice in the papers was on the 9th. And 1960 was the year listed in the reference material that Wikipedia already linked to, but the date in the actual article text was incorrect. So while I was there, I corrected the date. But looking into this, I also found an article from a few months after the death of the major that said Mrs. Mary Grant, who was his second cousin,
was apparently a wealthy socialite as well as a war hero in her own right. And according to that article, it was she who owned the house, not the major.
So a lot of things are happening in these rooms associated with Crowley. But this did actually happen. So he took his own life with a shotgun, and his housekeeper discovered him. Matt, you want to tell this part of the story?
Yeah. That's fine.
Well, it's so lovely. First, the dog, little Pickywick is running around with this bone. And, you know, the housekeeper doesn't know where the dog got this bone, but she kind of kicks it out into the garden. And that's when she discovers that he is not one with his head anymore.
Yeah.
And that bone was actually part of his skull that the dog was running off with. So it's just really gruesome story. I don't know how much it's true, but it's gruesome.
And she tells it in the other Loch Ness Monster documentary. And it's kind of brutal how she tells that story. She goes, you know, they found that piece of bone. It turned out to be the top of his skull, and they chucked it in the coffin when they buried him. I'm sure that's not what happened.
We used to laugh about it.
Yes.
I made it sound Irish there.
No, but that was good. You took me right back. Yeah. No, I don't know. It's worthy of being in Don Henley's Dirty Laundry song.
Yes, because salacious. Yeah,
she is the bubble-headed bleach blonde that comes on at 5 and tells you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye. Because boy, she just was laughing through that whole story.
A retired army major actually committed suicide in the bedroom Crowley used.
He was supposed to have a room of his own as you come in the front door, and his own room and bathroom there. And I went to look, and there he was in front of this big mirror and his head off. So I was so scared, I did run back to her bedroom, which was quite a distance, you know. And I said, "The Major shot himself, Mrs. Grant." When we came up and I went in the front door, there was this little bone at the front door, and they had a little doggy. She gave it to him for his birthday. Pickywick was his name. And I says, "Where did you find that, Pickywick?" Because they had a huge fridge. There was nothing in it. And I wondered. And I took the bone and just threw it. My husband used to laugh afterwards at what I did. Anyway, the detectives, I told the detectives this. We knew it was a bone of his skull. Yeah, it was a bit of Edward's skull. They found it, We put into the coffin with the rest.
So that is just one of the tragedies that is associated with the house and, again, linked to Crowley. Somehow Crowley is blamed for this. There's another story that's floating around, and I think you guys would have heard of it too, but I couldn't substantiate it. There's a tale that's told that a newly married couple moved into the house after the Grant family, and that the wife was blind. And after a month of living in the house, the husband just walked out on her and just left her alone and wandering around the house for a long period of time, unable to see and very distraught. So I don't know what the truth is behind this story, but it's very upsetting. Hopefully it's not true. Another one of those tales that isn't true.
Well, and it implies a level of inability to care for oneself that is probably not true for
Crowley.
Blind people. I just mean, like, I think, you know.
I get what you mean.
Yeah. Like, one of your senses.
Blind people are not incapacitated from, like, surviving or finding a telephone or calling for help or alert.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. But I think it's just another one of those horror stories, tragedies that's linked to the place. And so, you just have this, I guess, a revolving door of families and people moving into the house for a short period of time. I think that Kenneth Anger, the director that we talked about in the previous episode, the director of Lucifer Rising, and was a friend of Jimmy Page, so the guitarist from Led Zeppelin. So this brings us to an era that Crowley really had a resurgence in popularity. So this was with the 1960s. Mm-hmm. Counterculture, certainly among the rock and roll crowd. So notably, you had Brian Jones from the Beach Boys, who was really into Crowley. You had the Beatles had a fascination with him, in particular John Lennon. And as we know, Crowley's likeness appears on the iconic cover for Sgt. Pepper's. But I think, yeah, most notably Led Zeppelin. They had lots of stories associated with them, that the band members had sold their souls to Satan for fame and fortune. And so you had a lot of their history kind of tied in with the occult and Satanism, but specifically Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
He was really into all of that sort of stuff. And so he said in his own words that he'd read a lot of Crowley and was fascinated by his ideas. And so he already owned a lot of Crowley memorabilia. He had artwork and ceremonial robes. If you go and have a look on Google, you'll find some classic pictures of him dressed up in these robes. They're pretty cool. So I guess he thought, well, why not buy his house as well? And he bought the place essentially to inspire him to write music. And he did refurbish the place and renovated it. He wanted it to look as it did in the time of Crowley. And he had murals painted on the walls. So he really did a lot to bring the place up to speed and to make it look the way that it used to. But he ended up spending very little time there. So to invest all of that money and all of that time, he just visited the place very, very rarely.
Now, did he? I'd heard he put a recording studio there. Is that right? Or did you see that confirmed anywhere?
No.
I don't know about that.
There's a lot more stories than there are substantive evidence to back up those stories.
That's a key theme throughout this entire story. But he – and I've seen pictures. Matt and I have seen lots of pictures of the inside of the house during his – tenure there, and I haven't seen a music studio, but he claimed that the place had bad vibes, and he once said to Rolling Stone magazine that there were, so this is his quote, there were two or three owners before Crowley moved in. It was also a church that had burned to the ground with the congregation in it. So we know where these stories are coming from. And that is the site of this house. So that's not correct. It was a different lot. And he goes on to say, strange things have happened in that house that have nothing to do with Crowley. The bad vibes were already there. So he's linking everything back to the case of the church burning down with the congregation. Then he says a man was beheaded there, and sometimes you can hear his head rolling down. So I guess he means rolling down one of the halls there. So that takes us back to the Fraser period. And the Simon the 12th Fraser of Lovett, the fox, and how he was beheaded for treason. But the weird thing is he was beheaded at the Tower of London. So he wasn't beheaded there. Why would they have beheaded him there? But yet it's said that Simon's head can be heard rolling up and down the corridors in the house. So I don't know why his head would be doing that there when he was killed in London. And he didn't really have any connection to the house other than that his son built the place.
Well, so, and you also have the fact that nobody's ever seen his head rolling mm-hmm. around, and yet they know what it sounds like.
Well, that's
I mean, do you know what a head? I mean,
yeah, of course
imagine.
I know, but I mean, that's
different. That's yeah. That's experience. Experience is different. Because if you just heard the sound of a head rolling around, you wouldn't immediately go, oh, that sounds like a head rolling around.
Right.
I mean, and again, yeah. maybe not you, Blake.
That's a good point.
A normal person.
But I think that just the two main kind of things that are associated with Boleskine House are Crowley and Jimmy Page.
Yes.
And he owned the place for about 20 years, two decades. And yet he didn't live there very long himself, didn't spend much time there. Now, Boleskine is featured in The Song Remains the Same, which is a documentary which follows the band on their tour of the United States back in the early 70s. And there's one scene where Page is on the property and his eyes are glowing red, and we see him climbing to the top of the mountain to the soundtrack of Dazed and Confused. Love that song. And he meets a hooded creature that's holding a lantern. So it's all very mystical. And I think he was in love with the idea of the place and Crowley and the associations. But what I find interesting is that he found it had bad vibes. I've heard so many stories about him. Now, there's a book about Jimmy Page and the Curse of Boleskine House. I don't know if you guys have seen that. But, I mean, Jimmy Page really had and has a bad reputation for a lot of things. I don't know how much we want to go into that.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll just say this, that I enjoy the music of Led Zeppelin. And I've always been fascinated with Page, but in the past few years, I've learned about some of his nonsense behavior, and not a good dude.
Well, he wasn't. And I read of one anecdote where he visited David Bowie, and David Bowie had a cleansing of his house afterwards because he said there was just a darkness after Jimmy Page left. So I think it's interesting that the things that we know about him, his association, or his acts of pedophilia and other things that he's done, and yet he found the place had bad vibes. I thought that was kind of ironic.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
We're still talking about the Jimmy Page era, but he enlisted the help of a friend of his, so an old school friend of his named Malcolm Dent.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about. The stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or say, Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose. It kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever, crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and Wagon.
There is so much in our universe that remains hidden. Until now. My name is Kristen Seavey, and I have some stories that you might want to hear on the podcast, The Hidden Staircase. Whether it's true crime, paranormal occurrences, or perhaps something beyond the stars, I keep all their stories safe in my library. So come with me down the staircase, pull up a chair, and let's discover the enigmas that remain hidden from us all. Listen to The Hidden Staircase now, wherever you get podcasts.
So, yeah, moving on to the tenure of Malcolm Dent. So this is a friend of Page's. He'd known him for decades, and he asked his friend to be caretaker of the house. And so Dent met his wife in the area and raised a family there. And it's a little in contradiction with the other stories that we hear. So on the one hand, he loved living there. He was very happy during his time there, raising a family. But then there's a lot of other information out there about ghostly phenomena that he experienced during his time in the house. And if you do go back and look at that BBC documentary, he does talk about that. And some pretty strange activity, lots of noises, like gunshots, which are obviously linked to the Grant case, and groans and creaks. He'd talk about darkness throughout the house, even on bright, sunny days. So that seems to link back to Crowley talking about the house, writing about the house, and how dark it would get and how he needed to use candles to do his rituals. And Dent would talk about doors slamming throughout the night and rugs which would roll up and then unfurl by themselves, which I think is really interesting. I haven't heard of that one before.
No.
He spoke about shadowy figures and ghostly apparitions, but it was in Boleskine House where he experienced the most terrifying night of his life. He said that he went to bed one night and he heard this growling and snarling and banging at the bedroom door. So it was like a wild animal was there and trying to get in. So he says, quote, "Whatever was there was pure evil." So I don't know, what he attributed that to or exactly what happened, but he has also said that when weird things would happen in the house, that the family used to just say, oh, this is Alistair doing his thing. And he spoke about the sound of Lord Lovett's rolling head rolling down the halls. But then at other times he's talked about the worst thing that took place in the house was just the constant fans of Crowley and Page who would trespass the house and try to break in and try to steal bits of the house just as memorabilia and souvenirs. So I could imagine that being the case. But I do think a lot of the ghostly stuff goes back to Dent.
Wait, was he the caretaker or was he the scaretaker?
I'm just really glad he had that, you know, impenetrable wooden door to keep pure evil out.
Well, maybe it was made of ash or one of those yew trees or something.
Or the wood from the original Christ's cross.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, yeah. That's, good point.
That would do it. That would do it.
So another ghostly, well, I guess supernatural phenomenon, which is attributed to the house, is that the Loch Ness Monster, and we touched on this in the previous episode. So the claim is that Crowley had summoned the cryptid. Mr. Crowley! And so again, this is, I think, my favorite origin story for Nessie. So you have the, you had some sightings in the 19th century, which predate Crowley, but then you had all the famous sightings in the 1930s. So that does totally fit in with the timeline.
Unless you're one of those cryptozoologists who wants to claim, all the previous sort of, what we've talked about it before, the stories about the saint, Columba, trying to get rid of the beast in the river, which was the River Ness, not the Loch, et cetera, et cetera. But
water kelpies. You're right and wrong at the same
exactly.
time.
Well,
but those are the claims.
So what happened in 92?
Basically, Jimmy Page, I guess, became bored with Boleskine House. And also, as the story goes, he wanted to consolidate his fortune. And so he booted out Malcolm Dent and gave him some kind of severance pay. And he sold the place. And it was purchased by a couple, the McGillivrays. And they bought Boleskine and turned it into a hotel. They were skeptics. And they loved living there. They were asked at one point if they'd ever experienced anything mysterious in the house. And the wife said, absolutely nothing. I'm a non-believer. I didn't listen to all of that rubbish. We had a great time there. So I think that's interesting, just these different points of view. If you had a believer living there, then they experienced all kinds of evil, all kinds of phenomena. And if you had skeptics living there, nothing ever happened. And so there was another person who purchased the house after that family. It was a woman named Trudy Piker Baker. I think she's Dutch, and she was a reclusive millionaire. So she owned the place for a couple of years, and she had a terrible time there because she was really dismayed by all of the looters who kept raiding the place. Now, it was around this time, too, that the place was suffered a fire, and there were two fires which took place there, one in 2015 and one in 2019. And I've read a lot of different things about what actually happened. Some people say that these were arson, acts of arson. Some will say that it was arson by Christians who thought the place was evil. And then other people saying that there were acts of arson by fans of Crowley. For whatever reason, they decided to attack the house. I think there was another case too where there was a legitimate fire that took place in the kitchen. And you can imagine the place was probably run down at this point and not really taken care of. But, you still had people looting the place, trespassing. And this millionaire, she talked about how she had a squatter who he had the strange name of Mordecai Mosh. And he claimed that Crowley had invited him there. And that's why he was squatting in part of the ruins of the house.
And so, how are you going to argue with that?
I mean, that sounds like a character I made up for a role-playing game. That's
It's a pretty nifty name. Yeah. So as of 2019, the house has been owned by the Boleskine House Foundation. So they're an interesting crowd. They're a non-profit organization. They've taken ownership of the property, and they had plans to restore it. And Matt and I have watched a number of videos, and I like what they're doing. They seem to have a focus on conservation of the building and also conservation of local flora and fauna. So they do seem to have a good mission, and they must be putting a hell of a lot of money into this place as well. And they are suffering a lot of issues with trespassers too. But I think the thing that's weird to me is that I'm hearing all of these good things about the foundation, but at the same time, going back to 2020, there were reports of these new owners selling bags of charred remains of the house.
Oh, so buy some like purposes. Some Boleskine ash in order to like help fund the process of restoration.
And well, that's, I hear different things. Some say it was for that purpose. Others say it was to build a spiritual center on the site. And others say that they were selling off the ashes or ruins for magical spells. So I'm hearing lots of conflicting things about this group.
Interesting. But there is we can put a link to the BBC article from December of last year. About mm-hmm. that. There's some great pictures of what the house looks like currently in the sort of restoration efforts.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if they're going to open it up as a museum or bed and breakfast or hotel of some kind, but it's certainly nice. I think they have the funding or support of the local government
as well.
It
sounds like event space was what I read, which would be
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And if you want to dig into that deeper, you'll just hop into the show notes. So you can find your way there. But as we wrap this up, let's talk about how Boleskine fits in with our findings about researching other mysterious houses.
Well, you know, doing research into Boleskine House just made me think of other related houses that we've talked about on the show over the years, like Borley Rectory and the Winchester House, Winchester Mystery House. I think it's interesting, these houses that have these characters that really, and these interesting histories and folklores that really take over. And in each of these cases, you've got real history and you've got the truth that is beneath the folklore and the stories that are retold. And, you know, just like with the Winchester House, you know, we've gone into that in a lot of detail. And there's this story which is commonly told and retold, and that's the one that people will read about and hear about. And the truth is a lot more innocuous and makes a lot more sense. And I think that that's the case with Boleskine House. It's certainly seen a lot in its time. And that land is seen a lot. And it's a beautiful place too. It's just so magical and mysterious. But I think that a lot of the stories associated with it are BS.
Yeah. And a lot of the stories associated with Crowley as well. They're just and he was a man who loved making up stories about himself. So it's not shocking. And everybody in his circle of friends were a bunch of braggers and storytellers. So it is trying to pick the truth out is really difficult, you know. So really
difficult. You've got to peel back those layers of the onion, and certainly when you read about the stories that are associated with the house, things just don't ring true, and you dig into them a little bit and find out, because they're not true.
Well, I'm excited somebody's trying to restore it, and it's definitely one of the places I would love to visit if I ever get to make it to Loch Ness, which is one of my lifelong bucket list goals, you know. So
me too, on the bucket list.
Yeah. But
I think it's interesting that you're not reading nearly as many stories of people like us who just do a little bit of research and find out that everything falls apart.
Yeah.
You know, usually when you do a little search on YouTube, I think we had found one video, Karen and I, that was, when are we going to stop lying about the Abramelin thing? And that was like the only thing that was like opposing the folklore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it really wasn't. It was by a sorcerer who felt that it was being done improperly, and the way it was said to have been done was a bit of a lie. And that was it. But there's no real good skeptical things coming out, you know, especially on YouTube going, this is this falls apart. This falls apart fast. Why are we bothering?
Oh, until now.
Until now.
These episodes.
Well, there you go. So
we bring in the skepticism to the table.
Thank you guys for talking about this with us today and for nagging me into covering it. It is actually I love this place. I've long wanted to visit it, and so I really appreciate it. It's even though it's a one level house, it's full of many stories.
Yeah, indeed it is. And I think just the associations with such interesting characters like Crowley and Led Zeppelin, Jimmy Page, it really is surrounded in mystery. And again, it's just exciting to think what the house has seen in its time. So much history.
So if any, you know, patrons want to send us over there to do a very deep dive investigation on the scene, we'll certainly jump on.
Yeah. And we're always willing to do field trips.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You just heard part two of our two-part coverage of Bleskin House, the former home of Aleister Crowley and guitarist Jimmy Page, among others. Check our show notes for links, including those to the foundation, which is trying to restore the property. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Monster Talk. Each episode, we strive to bring you the very best in monster-related content with a focus on bringing scientific skepticism into the conversation. If you enjoy Monster Talk, we now have a variety of ways to support the show, all with convenient links at monstertalk.org/support. That's monstertalk.org/support. We have links there to our Patreon page as well as a donation button. Another great way to support the show is to buy books from our Amazon Monster Talk wish list, which directly helps us with our research. We love used books very much, so don't feel compelled to buy new ones, and we love Kindle so we can share our digital libraries with each other. And finally, without spending any money at all, you can support us by leaving a positive review at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive reviews help keep us visible in iTunes, which is a great way to help us find new listeners. And please share our show on your favorite social media platforms. Monster Talk's theme music is by Peach Stealing Monkeys. And Monster House is going to be producing books, and the very first of those will be The Science of Monsters by Joe Nickel, which is coming out very soon. I'm just waiting on proof copies now to make sure all the edits are in place. So stay tuned. You guys are definitely the target audience for this book.
Monster House presentation.